Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. This afternoon at 1:30, we will have live coverage and a simultaneous online chat during President Obama's deficit reduction speech. This will be his response to the Paul Ryan plan and could affect everything from Medicare and Medicaid to Social Security, defense spending, and the amount of taxes that you pay in almost any income category for the next 10 years. The president's deficit reduction speech live at 1:30 on AM 820 WNYC, and I'll be hosting a simultaneous live chat on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Hope you can join me. Also, of course, tomorrow morning, right back here, we will break down that speech and the reaction to it in great detail. But beyond the budget, one policy debate that's going on right now in the wake of the foreclosure crisis is whether Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac should be shut down and whether that phase-out would spell the end of the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage and presumably the end of near-universal home ownership or near-universal home ownership as a goal. I'm joined now by two experts on the front lines of this debate who have opposite views on the subject. David Min is the Associate Director for Financial Markets Policy at the Center for American Progress and author of a recent report titled Future of Housing Finance Reform, Why the 30-Year Fixed-Rate Mortgage is an Essential Part of Our Housing Finance System. And we're joined by Michael Lee, former chief economist at Freddie Mac, now the director of the Corky McMillan Center for Real Estate at San Diego State University, and co-author with Anthony Sanders of a March 2011 Mercatus Center working paper, Do We Need the 30-Year Fixed-Rate Mortgage? Welcome to WNYC, David Min and Michael Lee. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have a fixed-rate mortgage? Would you have been able to afford your current house without it? In other countries, the standard mortgage is shorter and adjustable. Anybody have experience with that that you want to share? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. David Min, what percentage of mortgages in this country are 30-year fixed-rate mortgages? Do you know?
Right now, I believe the number is about 90%. I think during the housing bubble, of course, that number was much lower. We saw a proliferation of adjustable-rate mortgages, I think as high as 40 or 50% of all mortgages during that period. So we've seen a shift back, as I think the wisdom of the markets has made clear, that during times of turbulence, people seek out less certainty, and that's clearly what the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage provides.
And Michael Lee, to what extent can we say that anyone who has a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is getting a government subsidy beyond the mortgage interest tax deduction?
Well, they get a subsidy by virtue of the fact that the rates for Fannie and Freddie guaranteed mortgages, as well as those insured by FHA, are lower than what you would see if those institutions weren't buying and securitizing them. So there's some subsidy embedded in interest rates for that reason, and those kind of mortgages are their bread-and-butter product.
But it's a guarantee. So are we actually taking money out of any taxpayer's pocket for that? I mean, the housing crisis, as we generally understand it, was around the other kind of mortgages, the adjustable rate mortgages that were subprime, that really sunk the housing market. So was there really a problem with the fixed rate 30?
I would say that adjustable rate mortgages did not sink the U.S. housing market, that in fact they're only one component of what happened. And right now what we see happening for the mortgage defaults is a lot of negative equity, and a lot of borrowers are now locked into longer-term fixed rates and can't refinance because of that negative equity situation.
David, do you agree that the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage contributed to the bubble and the crisis?
That's absolutely just wrong. I mean, adjustable rate mortgages have defaulted at 5 to 6 times the rate of 30-year fixed-rate mortgages. If we had simply had 30-year fixed during this crisis, I think Michael's the only person I've ever heard make the claim that 30-year fixed somehow caused this crisis. It's been a safe product. It's always been a safe product. And for that reason, other countries have always tried to figure out ways to try to get the 30-year as the standard product in their own country. I think it's amazing we're having this debate because around the world, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, have all spent lots of time and resources trying to figure out how to get the 30-year fixed into their country. And here we are debating about throwing this product, which everyone agrees is the safest product out there, defaults at the lowest rates, out of the system. I don't understand it, and I think the claim that the 30-year fix caused the crisis and that ARMs were not primarily responsible is fundamentally wrong.
ARMs are adjustable rate mortgages. Michael Lee, what becomes of the standard home mortgage if the 30-year fix goes away, or if Fannie and Freddie or whatever would replace them aren't around to subsidize or guarantee these mortgages?
First, to just make one quick rebuttal to David.
Sure.
Nobody is saying that the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage caused the mortgage crisis. It was just one factor in it, and that other countries, in fact, don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages but have come through the crisis with far lower default rates than the U.S., even far lower default rates than our 30-year fixed. But what would happen for the market is that if the government stopped subsidizing the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, it would still exist. It would certainly be a far lower percentage than the 90% that David cited. My guess is that it would end up being more like around 30% because it would be more costly. And borrowers would select not short-term adjustable-rate mortgages, as David suggests, but I think a lot of mortgages would be in the more medium-term, like our hybrid ARMs, which are 5 to 10 years in terms of fixed rates, or the Canadian rollover mortgage, which typically is 5 years and then readjusts to a new market interest rate at that time.
Let me stay with you for a minute. Tell us why that's a good thing. It would make a lot of people nervous, I think, given that we're used to the 30-year fixed, to hear, well, I'm going to take out a 30-year mortgage on a house, and I don't know what my income's going to be in 5 or 10 years, but I'm not going to be able to have payments at a level that I can predict?
Well, I think the question is, for how long do you need that payment certainty? Certainly, it's a desirable feature to have, our payments and interest rates fixed for 30 years, but the average person doesn't stay in a house for 30 years. The average person doesn't keep a mortgage for anything close to 30 years. And there's a significant cost to that. There's a cost in terms of the yield curve and the fact that long-term rates incorporating expected inflation are higher than short-term rates. And we also have this free prepayment option that we give borrowers. That also increases the cost of that mortgage. Borrowers have a choice.
So, David Min, same question. What would change for whom precisely if the banks were no longer backstopped by the federal government for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages?
Well, first of all, I think it's just wrong to say 30% of Americans would have that product. If you look at the history of the United States market, prior to the 1930s, before the FHA and the government started introducing this product, it didn't exist at all. And if you look at commercial real estate, which a lot of people think resembles, a privatized residential mortgage system, there's no 30-year fixed, or it's very, very rare. And so I think, yeah, you'll have a few people have it, but it'll be very rare, very expensive, just like it is in other countries, as Michael points out, where it's really just an exotic product for very few people.
You mean because you would have to have so much money already saved as kind of potential collateral on your mortgage loan that the banks just wouldn't give it to anybody other than that?
You'd probably need to be a millionaire with a lot of wealth, a lot of income, and an extremely high credit score. And even then, it might be tough to get, just because if you think about it from the investor's perspective, they're putting in 30 years of interest rate risk. I think Michael makes this point in his paper. Somebody has to bear that risk, and in that case, it's the lender. Without the competitive market presence that Fannie and Freddie provide, there's simply no reason for banks to really offer that except it's a niche product.
So let me stay with you for a minute and follow up and ask, why should the taxpayers have to take that risk on behalf of people who can't afford home ownership in the marketplace on their own? Why should that be a taxpayer responsibility?
Sure. And what I point out is that I think Michael talks about other countries. That, in other countries that have lower default rates, I point out that they've all bailed out their banks. So the true cost of the mortgage default crisis in other countries is not necessarily reflected in the default rates over there. And I'd also point out that in every other country, in every other advanced country in the world, governments already support their mortgage market. So in Canada, which has a five-year rollover, as Michael mentioned, they explicitly backstopped something like 70% of their mortgage markets already, similar to how Fannie and Freddie do. So I would say Fannie and Freddie are necessary for the 30-year fix, but that's not the only thing that they offer. I think that what we learned from the Great Depression is that in the absence of some level of government support, mortgage finance is very rare, and it's extremely volatile, which actually is more costly for the taxpayer because it creates these booms and busts. So what I'd say is what costs the taxpayer money ultimately is failures in regulation. It's not the government support, which is implied throughout every country. It's going to be there because anytime you have a 30-50% housing drop, policymakers are going to want to step in and intervene to prevent this from turning into a Great Depression. But the key is regulation there.
I'm going to start bringing
your initial question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead and answer that question. Yeah.
Your initial question of what would happen to Americans in the absence of the 30-year fix. I think a lot of Americans have forgotten what the value of the 30-year fix is. The value becomes manifest only in one of two instances, when you see large interest rate increases or you see a difficulty in refinancing. And that's when that cost certainty and stability are really valuable for households. So during the 1970s, for example, if you had had that five-year rollover mortgage that Michael is talking about, you would have gone from about an 8% interest rate to about a 20% interest rate over the course of that loan. I don't know about you, but that's more than doubling of a mortgage payment. I don't know how many households can really afford that type of payment shock. In the 2000s, following the mortgage crisis, we saw a large disappearance of mortgage finance until the federal government started stepping in. Again, you saw delinquency rates of adjustable rate mortgages really much, much higher than fixed rate mortgages during that period. So I think that Americans are starting to realize again the benefits of the fixed rate mortgage, but we forgot that lesson over the last 20 years because interest rates were so stable and declining, and it was really easy to get a mortgage all the time.
All right, we're going to bring in some callers here, and I wonder if anybody is listening who has had a mortgage of a different type in another country. If anybody from the UK or anybody else would like to add yourself to our caller board, we would love to add a voice like that. 212-433-WNYC, because part of this discussion is international. Many other industrialized countries don't do it the way we do. 212-433-9692 for David Min from the Center for American Progress, who wrote a report on why the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is an essential part of our housing finance system, and Michael Lee from the Macmillan Center for Real Estate at San Diego State University, and authored a report, Do We Need the 30-Year Fixed-Rate Mortgage? And Saul in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hello, Saul.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I have a 30-year mortgage, and it's pretty low. It's 5.335. And I'm in the construction field. I called you a few days ago. I'm in the construction field. Kind of the income has lowered for me, and I tried to do the remodification, and that was the biggest joke in the world. I'm still trying to do the remodification for the past 2 years. I don't know if this has anything to do with what you guys are talking about, but I got a big pamphlet from the Department of HUD. And so on. I called all the departments, and it was just they passed the buck from one people to another department to another department to another department. I'm figuring, what are these people? What are their jobs?
You're saying right. What are they doing in the bureaucracy? And you're saying you tried to get a loan modification.
Yes.
And you couldn't.
And I couldn't. I'm still trying. I went to my lawyers directly. And we're doing the same thing over again.
Right. Now, Saul, I'm going to go. And I think this is actually off topic. But David Min from Center for American Progress, do you want to give him any advice very briefly? We know foreclosure loan modifications have been really difficult to get.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that the HAMP program has been very slow in getting off the ground, and that's one of the issues. you know, if you want to email me with your name and contact information, I'm happy to pass you along to some folks that I know, and maybe they can help you along. Without knowing the specifics of your situation, it's hard to comment.
You want to give your email?
You know, whether it's bureaucracy or whether you're just getting denied. But unfortunately, HAMP has not worked as well as people had hoped it would.
All right. So contact David Min, M-I-N, at the Center for American Progress. And Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. You have a 15-year fixed rate, yes?
That was a choice, though. We just thought we'd want to pay things off a little faster, not because we couldn't get a 30. But my question is, think about George Bailey and Building and Loan and It's a Wonderful Life. It was all about a community of people who believed enough in the possibility of their neighbors that they made their best selves possible by offering something like a 30-year fixed loan, and the whole country benefited from that. The reason we're stepping away from it now isn't being discussed very much. I think it has to do with China trade and the fact that we are competing with workers who are being oppressed by their government to lower their wage rates to the point where, to compete, our workers no longer have the wages to afford all the mortgages we used to. And the solution is not to withdraw from our vision of America, but to adjust the trade terrain so it's fairer.
Thank you very much. So, Michael Lee, we have China. We have George Bailey.
You know, I think if you look around internationally, what you see is that many other countries have comparable or higher home ownership rates. So the 30-year fixed rate mortgage is not an essential product for home ownership. Secondly, we look around other countries, their mortgage markets have been a lot more stable than ours, even though they lack the 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So I don't think that 30-year fixed rate mortgage is something that's absolutely essential. It's a nice product for borrowers, and I think it still would exist. And in fact, pre-crisis, the jumbo market was about 30% fixed rate without, you know, government backing. And I think that that's where I feel, you know, the market would be if we had less government support. And the other point that I would make is that this is not a free lunch, that we've paid a lot of money in terms of taxpayer support to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in order to keep, among other things, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. We have to factor that cost into desirability of keeping the product.
Now,
Brian, if I could respond to both to the caller and then to Michael. First, as far as the caller, you know, I agree to a certain extent. There are larger issues at play. One of the primary values of the 30-year fix is it provides a level of cost certainty. And one of the things that's underappreciated today by many folks in Washington, D.C., is that the average American household today has many, many more risks than they did in the 1930s, 1950s, 1970s. They have, you know, risk of a catastrophic health problem that's probably, you know, maybe not insured enough. You know, they have the risk of job loss. They're bearing all these risks today that they didn't bear in past eras. Adding the mortgage risk on top of that seems to me like perhaps the straw that would break the camel's back. As far as Michael, I think Michael's unfortunately conflating between what caused this last crisis and what the difference is between the 30-year fixed and other mortgages. As I mentioned before, the 30-year fixed has two main differences. It's in who bears the interest rate risk and who bears the refinancing risk. I don't think anybody would argue that this last crisis was about interest rate risk. It was about default risk, which was occurring because of unregulated markets. In every country you saw where mortgage crisis happened or you saw a major housing bubble, it wasn't because of the 30-year interest rate risk. Interest rates were pretty stable the whole time. It was, in fact, because you saw lots of unregulated or less regulated lending, underwriting standards deteriorated, and that was the major problem.
From our comments page, a number of people are writing some version of this. This one comes from Jay Garbos in Queens, and it says, times have changed. Oh, the point is that city dwellers are subsidizing suburbia. And he writes, times have changed. We should be re-urbanizing and de-suburbanizing. The U.S. should be subsidizing rentals and modest condos, not McMansions. So, Michael Lee, first, do you think that city dwellers are, in effect, subsidizing suburbia because of the government guarantees on the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, because city dwellers tend more to be renters, and that policy should take this into account?
Well, I think that you know, the kind of subsidies we provide home ownership, which are quite extensive, not only through interest rates but through the mortgage interest tax deduction, certainly get capitalized into house prices, particularly in areas where land supply is relatively scarce. And as a consequence, it has, I think, fostered overconsumption of housing, which manifests itself in McMansions. And I think a more sustainable situation is probably less government backing for home ownership. Let people choose between rental and home ownership, and that's going to end up, I think, having some of the effects your caller suggests.
Do you think that we would be a better society if we had more renting and less owning, Michael?
Yes, because I think you would have better labor mobility. People are locked into their houses now and as a consequence can't move for job opportunities and probably spend more of their income on housing than they otherwise would. And so I think that a lower, and I'm not talking about drastically lower, I'm saying that, you know, maybe something closer to the low 60%, 62, 63% home ownership rates, probably more sustainable than getting up to 69, 70% that we did pre-crisis.
Do you agree with that, David?
You know, this is one area where I think Michael and I largely agree. We definitely need a rebalancing of, between rental and housing, home ownership. We actually, the Center for American Progress authored a proposal on mortgage finance reform, and that was one of the key things we called for was, you know, particularly multifamily, which is really important in New York City, of course, but that rebalancing away from single-family home ownership and more towards multifamily rental is something that we want to see happen more of. There are things like the mortgage interest deduction that really do tilt the playing field in favor of home ownership, and I think they should be reexamined.
Then why do you support then why do you support retaining the 30-year fixed with the government guarantees?
Sure, because the 30-year fixed isn't simply about you know, home ownership per se. It's about, to the extent we have home ownership, do we want stable, certain, and you know, affordable home ownership for homeowners? You know, I think the third year, in the context of home ownership, do we want that the third year or the 5 year? What's the preferred product? And I think there's no question that 30 years is a better product. One other thing I would note is that in the context of rental, most rental financing in the United States comes from one of two sources. For multifamily, a large portion of that comes from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, who that's part of the activities they do. And then the other, for single-family rentals, that's entirely financed almost by the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. So if you're renting a home, you know, maybe in the suburbs, maybe in the city, and it's single-family or maybe a six-unit house, basically, that's going to be financed by a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage as well.
We're almost out of time, but we now have callers on the board who had mortgages in three other countries, France, Canada, and Australia. And let me go through these real quick and just compare the experience with the American mortgage. Corinne in Manhattan, originally from France. Thank you so much for calling.
Hello.
What was your mortgage like in France?
What was like? Well, I would say the way to qualify for a mortgage was way different. First, the calculation is based on the net income and not like the gross in the States. And we also need like a larger down payment, which is like between 20 to 30%.
In France, you needed that. So was the whole thing more stable when this crisis hit the rest of the U.S. and a lot of Europe?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat your question?
Did the French housing market, because of those larger down payments, turn out to be more stable in the last few years when the U.K. and Ireland and the U.S., et cetera, were going through this meltdown? Okay, she didn't understand the follow-up question. That's okay. Scotty in Secaucus, you're on WNYC, originally from Canada, right?
Originally from Canada, and I now have a mortgage here, yes.
And what was your mortgage in Canada like?
It's quasi-terrifying. The banking system in Canada is, I think, more stringently regulated. The laws may not be better, but they're more strictly enforced. So the system is more stable, but every 5 years you get to play that lottery, and I think I saved 2% the decade before I left Canada, but in the 70s when I was a little kid, my parents' mortgage went from 7 or 8% to somewhere around 15, and they almost lost the house. And my dad's a firefighter, so it was a very stable job, and it was terrifying.
The lottery that you refer to after 5 years is the interest rate lottery. And
that is correct.
And you can go in voluntarily or you're forced into it?
It's you can go in at any time if you want to take a wicked penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of 5 years, you have to go to the new market rate.
Thank you very much. And Justin in Brooklyn, originally from Australia. Hi, Justin. What was your mortgage like there?
Well, I've got a split mortgage, so it's about 25% of it is variable, and then 75% of it is fixed for 5 years. And had I have had the option for a 30-year mortgage, I would have snapped it up, you know, in a second.
Thank you.
I think it would be a much better product.
Thank you very much. So just to briefly finish up, David and Michael, we really did hear three different systems from three different countries. They were all representative of their countries of origin. The caller from France, where the higher down payment was required. The caller from Canada, who got thrust into the refinancing market every 5 years, and had to live with what the new rates were. And the caller from Australia, who was able to take that hybrid. What's the lesson of that little round robin, David?
Well, I think you heard the two people who talked about the duration of the loan both express a strong preference for the 30-year fixed. I think that's universal in Canada and the United Kingdom and Australia, as I mentioned before. They all spent a lot of time trying to figure out how they could make the 30-year more standard there. One reason for that, by the way, in addition to the terrifying lottery that Scotty mentioned, one reason for that is that from a macroeconomic or policy perspective, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is more stable for the economy. When you have adjustable rate mortgages dominate, one major study of the United Kingdom's efforts to figure out how to do the 30-year found that where you have adjustable rate mortgages or rollover mortgages predominate, the housing markets there are six times as volatile as they are in the United States or Denmark, where the 30-year fixed is predominant.
Michael Lee, last word, 30 seconds.
Well, I think certainly you can have bad situations with short-term adjustables, and that was the point of the UK study. I think something that's more intermediate term, that's in the 5 to 10 year range, is going to satisfy most borrowers and not kind of result in the catastrophic situations that David suggests. And again, it's a matter of cost, that it's costly to provide the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage for consumers in terms of the interest rates they pay. And as we've seen with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in taxpayers supporting institutions that provide that mortgage.
All right. This is a real debate for the coming post-Fannie and Freddie era. Should America live without the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage as widespread as it is now because of government guarantees? Michael Lee from San Diego State, David Min from the Center for American Progress, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will have a call-in for you because the 30-year mortgage is one staple of middle-class life in this country. Another one is your car. But gasoline prices are getting just high enough now that people are starting to change their behaviors. This affects us as individuals, and it could affect the national economy as well if it goes on or gets worse. And so we will open up the phones for a few minutes right now just to find out how you're changing your driving habits because of rising gasoline prices. Are you? Call us right now at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. How are you changing your behavior regarding driving or anything else that may be an indirect cause of or an indirect result of rising gasoline prices? How are you changing your behavior because of these new $4 or so gasoline prices? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll put you right on the air after this.